Welcome to the Bloody Broads Pod. We're your Bloody Broads. I'm Bhavna Sharma.
And I'm Jamie Howard. We are your horror guides from page to screen and everything in between. And this week, I could not be more excited because we have a very special guest who's taking time away from directing, writing, and executive producing the current season of Slasher to talk about one of my favorite movies, one of his favorite movies, Mr. Ian Carpenter. How the hell are you?
Wow. I'm really good. Yeah, I didn't know it was one of your favorite movies as well. Oh, that's fantastic. And actually you guys just froze for the first time in our entire talk.
You're good.
You're all right.
I'm good. I'm really good. I'm on hiatus right now in the middle of shooting Slasher season 5. Well, not in the middle, probably 2/3 through. So I'm exhausted. I'm sure I won't make a lot of sense, and I'm so grateful to be not, you know, I mean, we're still working. I mean, we did a big location scout yesterday, and we have tons of meetings tomorrow and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm good. How are you guys?
Amazing. We're fantastic. So we're having you on for our very special 20th episode ever. You are right in the middle of our summer of slashers, so it felt appropriate to have you on and to also cover opera. I'm just going to kick us off, you guys, because yes.
Hold on. I do want to say too, I really love your podcast, and I love the first two episodes are big for me. And I noticed you guys did Clockwork, and I got to go listen to that because that was an enormous movie for me. But the first two about The Shining were amazing for me, and I can't believe the sort of depth of all of that. And you guys got me to finally read the book, which because of the size of it, I had avoided forever. And I loved that, and that was very much guided by what you guys had done. So thank you, and I really love the podcast.
Oh my gosh, you. I'm like turning the color of my shirt right now.
I'm trying not to cry because I love that book. So if I can get anyone to read it, it's a victory for me.
I know we always talk about how like The Shining is a book is what brought Bhavna and I together, and then I tweeted out randomly one night at like 2 a.m. I was like, I really just need to talk with someone about how The Shining is an allegory for like family trauma haunting you and like alcoholism is the demons. And Bhavna was like, hey girl, what's up? Like she pulled in my DMs. So that's how our podcast got started.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
Thank you, Ian.
Yeah, that just made like our whole season. Oh my God. Just to start off with, I'm obviously obsessed with slashers and Macbeth. It is like my dream to play Lady Macbeth one day. So this movie was like extremely on brand. I was like Argento, Macbeth, and stabbing people. Hell yes. It is wild to me that there is this whole like, you know, Macbeth being the cursed play and like in the theater you call it the Scottish play, et cetera, when the actor that plays the director in the movie literally got into a car accident while they were filming this, obviously had to get like a blood transfusion, and that's how he found out he had AIDS.
Yeah, and this is his last, this I believe is his last performance.
Yes,
yeah.
That is wild.
It's Ian Charleston, and he's an amazing actor. And that was one of the reasons, that was one of the things that kind of rocked me when I saw the movie. And I don't think I saw it when it came out, even though I was around. I think I probably saw it a couple of years later, which you guys couldn't have been because it's what, 35 years old?
It's 1 year older than me.
And it's 6 years older, six years older than me.
Yeah. So, but I had, a huge movie however many years before that was Chariots of Fire. And he's incredible and special in it. So then I saw this movie and I saw it not dubbed. And his Italian, and maybe he was dubbed, but I don't think he was. Like, I was sitting there going, what? This guy with this fantastic plummy English accent speaks what to my ears sounds like amazing Italian. Maybe I'm a sucker for him being dubbed the other way, but I don't actually think that's what happened. Anyway.
I'm shook. I didn't know.
Me too.
How did you find it undubbed? I'm so jealous.
I don't remember. I can usually remember some of these first screenings. I don't know where I saw this, and especially because of how much it it affected me. But though I actually have an original Italian version of it, because I saw it. I bet I saw it in the film festival in Toronto, and then I couldn't find it anywhere. Which was one of those that was like an exciting thing, right? Where you sat there and you went, "Oh my God, when will I ever see that movie again?" And I went through to a trip through backpacking through Europe, probably 2 or 3 years later, and that was half of what I was doing. Was like I'd go to a different place, and it wasn't until I got to Rome. And then they were like, "Oh yeah, you know, here it is," and I could buy the thing on VHS, and you know, blah 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 blah. So that's a fully Italian version of it. But anyway, I
digress. That's still a problem with the festival, though. Like when Vigil came out, it was 2019, and I saw it at Midnight Madness with a friend, and we covered it a few episodes ago. The Vigil came out, and I was waiting for it to come out like for a long time. There's been a couple of movies that I've seen at Midnight Madness, or I've seen just at the festival in general, that either just don't get picked up or they don't get released until years later. And I'm like, I've been sitting on this movie for years. I just want to talk about it.
Well, that's often back when I used to go hard at TIFF, that's how I would choose what I would see. I would sit there and go, you know, you can go through the booklet and it sits there and it lists the distributors. Yeah. If there was a distributor that I recognized with my like minor knowledge, I'd be like, okay, I'm not going to see that. It's going to open in 2 weeks after the festival. And it was like chasing all that stuff, which, you know, at the time was me getting hip to, you know, Hong Kong cinema and Iranian cinema. And some like sort of more rare Russian stuff where I'd be like, I'm never going to see this again, which is a crazy feeling. And I think a slightly unrelatable feeling these days when, you know, you feel like you can call up anything, but you know, it's clear sometimes there is still, a serious hunt, especially for genre films. If they're not big, big name stuff, you know?
That's been the biggest thing for us is like if we find something at a festival and like same concept, like we're worried that it's just not going to come out for, you know, years sometimes. I mean, it's so interesting to me too that this movie is just the blueprint for pretty much every 90s slasher that I love. literally both Screams. Kevin Williamson said copy paste. And then it occurred to me too at the real ending of the movie, we get the classic like white sweater getting stabbed, which Bob and I just covered. I Know What You Did Last Summer, and talked about how Freddie Prinze Jr.'s character wears a thick white cable knit sweater in the middle of the North Carolina heat and summer. But I love that this film, I mean, Argento in general is the blueprint for so much, right? Like it just blows my fucking mind. And I was so happy that you wanted to cover this, Ian, because I was like, I know you've said before what an impact that his work and specifically this movie like had on you.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and I just rewatched it again just now. And I mean, and every now and then I go, you know, cause I saw it back then. So I saw it 30 plus years ago, and I'm like, am I still the same person? I should say, you know, I saw this as I had moved to Toronto. I was going to university. I was nerding out and loving, deciding I was an artist, you know, and I was like, I was going to write, I was going to direct theater, I was going to do all this kind of stuff. And I was losing my mind about movies and being exposed to things that you couldn't see in the suburbs and all that kind of stuff. And so I was just like gorging myself. So this movie is definitely a mix of sort of all of what was flying around in my life, especially as I started to, you know, before I moved into TV and film, I was writing and directing theater for 15 years. So this was, you know, is part of that. That was deeply relatable. You know, it ticked off everything. But going back to it just now, I'm in awe of the filmmaking. Like the cinematography, the direction is astounding. And it's so, you know, it's so over the top, but beautifully so for me. I mean, I really love that. I mean, I love that about Adam McDonald, the director on the three seasons I've done of Slasher. Mm. Like he is such a visceral filmmaker, and you feel that with Argento. Like he just, like there is no restraint. Like he just goes for it. And he, and for me, I mean, this is the film. I think his other films are great too. There's some misses for sure, but this is one where it just keeps landing again and again and again. And all that very feeling POV camera work, which is just so silky smooth in a way that I actually miss these days. Just the way that stuff floats, and in a movie that's all about point of view, about, you know, yeah. stating the mm-hmm. obvious, about vision, about watching, about audiences, about, you know, implicating the audience in those kinds of things, and the complexity there. It's just so well handled. And I love how much that POV manipulates us, the times where it goes backwards, even though the character's moving forwards, the times where you think, you know, which he's learning from other Italian filmmakers, like you're copying from other Italian filmmakers, the times where you sit there and you go, oh, I'm walking as so-and-so, this is their POV, then you stumble upon them and you just get that sort of mind fuckery of that experience. You know, it's so good, it's so clever, it's so manipulative, it's so joyful. Like it's a ton of fun.
There's that one shot in particular that I had to be like, wait, this was made in 86, 87.
Yeah.
Was the crow shot in the theater and I was like, wait a minute. Like I was watching it. I was so into it that, I'm like, okay, cool. And then I was like, wait a minute, the shot, how did they do this back then?
Yes.
Like where's the equipment? Like, you know, obviously I know they would clean everything up in post, but still it's like, how? Like it was so clean.
Yeah, I'm shooting every day and I'm like, I don't know how, I know this is his biggest budget movie, but I don't know how they did it. Like it's so clever and it lands so well. And yeah, it just feels impossible. What was there, like a little circling yes. little track
and,
up there?
And it wasn't even just staying like level. It was coming down. Oh, yeah. It was swooping around. It was going. And then like...
I pictured like one of those like Hot Wheels tracks with like a GoPro strapped to it. Yeah. I'm always just fascinated by like... Because especially in this film, I think he really, like you said, Ian, there's a joy in it. It felt like he let loose, wherein,
yeah.
especially even in like Suspiria, that's still, to me, a very like classically made film in terms of, mm-hmm. I guess, technique, for lack of better, you know, terminology. But in this, I mean, the POV shots are just such a classic thriller horror thing now. And you're right. We don't get that. Even in the latest Scream, which Bhavna and I both loved, but like, yes. it was still missing like that feeling. And everyone talks about how, you know, yes, they have it in Halloween. And like, we see it through Michael's mask eyes and everything. But in this, it was a plot device. And I yeah. think it always feels fresh to me, which is hard for me to say about a lot of horror movies coming out now and movies in general.
Yeah.
I don't know. I could probably go on about the cinematography for the entire podcast.
It's astounding. And actually, as we talk about it, I sit there and I go, oh, this is like the difference between the, you know, within genre, within horror, I would say there's like an American approach to the joyfulness and fun of horror. That's Sam Raimi for me. And
yes.
and then, of course, Argento, he does the, and I'm sure I'm projecting my North American, you know, infatuation with Europe and all this kind of stuff on it. But it's just so different. It's, you know, as Fellini is to whoever we want to compare him to here, there's just something classier and smoother and deeper and richer. And I take nothing from Raimi, who's, you know, yeah. there's no movie I've seen more than Evil Dead. But he just does it so differently and aspires to something elevated in a, mm-hmm. in an over the top, operatic, to be obvious, sort of histrionic way, as well too in the writing of those characters. I mean, they're like, they're so melodramatic and as are the performances, and I'm so here for it. Like, it's like, it's still, I can totally, it's one of those things that you watch and you go, I totally understand the people that for whom this is ridiculous and they can't stand it. And they're like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, I don't care. So it's so good. It so works. That's how I want it to be. It's amazing.
The only thing I found ridiculous about this, I mean, the only ridiculous thing, I guess, or the only thing that I was just like, that's kind of but I'll roll with it, was just the killer's motivation. Mm. That's it.
Yeah.
That's literally the only thing I found kind of ridiculous. I'm like, you know what? That doesn't really track as well, but I'll just go with it. He's crazy anyway.
Yeah.
Because we hear like barely ending, anything about this character, about her, Betty's mother, for most of the movie. And then it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, oh, hey, by the way.
Yeah, it's crazy. Oh yeah, and the brain shots, like the shots of her brain. Like, we have to get that, right? Which at the very beginning when you first see it, I'm like, is it her brain? Is it the killer's brain? And maybe that's just me being slow, but then you like clue into like, oh, this is her. This is her brain tweaking and going back to mommy times and all that sort of screwed up, voyeuristic, sadistic killing, sexualized killing stuff. And anyway, amazing.
As one does.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, even talking about other things that have borrowed from this, obviously Scream borrowing, you know, it's always someone you know, the phone call trope. Even Scream 2 borrowing our heroine being in a play and being a character that, you know, is very... on the nose in
and
the play.
Scream 3 with the mother, kind of the convoluted, like,
exactly
the mother being involved in some kind of shady business in the past and that having effect on like the kids now.
Right. Yeah. But even after all that, Dexter's whole storyline is that, hey, I saw, you know, my mother get brutalized as a child and I'm having these like flash memories of it. And that's what motivates me to kill. And so every time I watch something now that reminds me of this movie, I'm just like, oh, Ren Argento, his check. I'm like, he is like pre-writing the entire like horror genre for the next like 30 years, it felt like. And I just,
yeah.
I mean, that, and then I wanted to get into the music too, because I know Boff and I were cracking up. Yes. I love metal music, but it was so, it threw me off with like, you expect this like big, beautiful soundtrack, and then it's just like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
And I was just like, oh, okay, we're on that vibe. All right, cool. Right. And then it just cuts to like the eye torture, which I'm just like, it's eye stuff for me.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
for
yeah.
me, it's yeah. eye stuff. I can't deal with eye stuff. And
that's why you can't watch one of my movies, Bhavna.
Well, I'll stomach it, but just
no one that we're listening to can see. But look at this with my glasses right here. It's like so yeah. Like, eye stuff is big for me too. I've had a lot of surgery. I'm still recovering from an eye surgery right now, and this all goes all the way back from having a. This sounds like a line, but a fish hook pierced my eyelid and go into my eye, et cetera, just led to like a million different problems after that. And so, yeah, it's like, it feels so juicy, right? They're just such places of wounding, and he manipulates that, you know, so well. It's just, it's crazy.
And I think that's what I think that's what brought it up to the times as well. Like, that's, I think that's what really modernized it, because you're dealing with opera, so it could be set at any time. He really could have given you like a Last Year at Marion Bad type of like mind fuck of like, when am I?
Yeah.
But I think the metal was what really grounded it in the 80s or the late 80s. It's like, all right, cool. This is of the time. I mean, the fashion too, but he could have done a bunch of things with it. But I found that the metal music was what kind of kept me grounded as like a through line in a really weird way.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, it's like, I mean, this is the problem. We're going to bring up things that I'm just going to keep saying. I love it.
And that's not a problem.
Again, I understand anyone who's like, you know, I would understand. And I, you know, I grew up in high school, my crowd, I was the new waver amongst a ton of hardcore and metal friends and all that. So I grew up with it, and I could see some of them going, oh, this is a little cheesy. Though I think the guy that he keeps using for that has some pedigree. I'm forgetting his name. I know, but he was from a band called Goblin. So anyway, it's, I don't know. It works. It works so well for me. Right. And again, stating the obvious, and in a movie also so much about music, it just makes so much sense that he goes there. But then there's all the great, you know, which you see with, and I should learn how to say the Giallo, you know, all those movies, that kind of hardcore throbbing synth stuff. Like he's got that in there too. There's some Eno in there. It's amazing.
And adding to movies that have taken from this Last Night in Soho as well. Like, oh, if you want to go like even up to now, like if you guys have seen Last Night in Soho.
Yes,
which,
I have. Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah. I saw it at the festival and I literally just sat back in my seat going like, oh my God, I want to see this again immediately. But also going like, what movies and stuff. But the music really was a huge part of that as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
when you said throbbing, Ian, I was like, because it is, but it is, that is Giallo. Like that is, and that's part of why I love it so much, because it's just so over the top in some aspects and then so real in others. And we get like the classic, you know, splashes of red lighting and like use of color and everything. But even having the heroine, even having Betty be frigid, quote unquote, and they use that in the dubbed over version. Obviously, that reminds me of Sydney in the first film of Scream, but that's also so woven into so many Giallo films where like sexuality is just inherent to that subgenre.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with it. Bhavna knows, like, I'm always making jokes about being a bimbo. Like, I miss that like fun, like you said, there's a fun playfulness. Yeah. And it's almost like wholesome in a really weird way. We talked about this. Was it in I Know What You Did Last Summer, Bhavna? What episode did I talk about?
I Know What You Did Last Summer, because they were talking about it at the bonfire in the beginning.
Yes. Mm. And it's like there's these politics of women's bodies and like what part of us is not for human consumption, especially as an actor. Like you're expected to be on. I mean, people love to be like, well, you signed up for this career, so you should just be able to accept whatever comes with it. And it's like, well, okay, I didn't really sign up to be seen as, you know, subhuman.
Oh, God.
But, yeah. But it's just really interesting to me that he takes her, who's normally the performer, and turns her into the audience. Like, that is such a mindfuck moment for me.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember seeing this for the first time. I think I was 17 or 18. And I was just like, holy shit. Like, I think I said it every 10 minutes throughout the entire 90-minute film.
Yeah.
Mostly because it was so scandalous for me at the time to be watching something like that. I was very sheltered. But also because it strung together, like I said, all these other moments in horror that I had already seen behind my parents' back. And I was like, oh, that's where they got this from. Like, oh, okay, got it. And it's really hard to not judge other films through this lens once you've seen something so fundamental and so well done. Like, I know we've already talked about this before, but just I definitely want to get into the special effects when we talk about our favorite kills, because it's so good.
it's so interesting. Well, to go back to what you're saying there, I mean, how do you not judge, I mean, do we need to judge them? But, you know, just like be so aware of the debt that that you know, horror filmmakers owe him. And again, same thing with someone like Raimi or something like that. Like you could almost I'm really bending terms here, but you could almost like refer to both of them as almost like the experimental horror filmmakers. They're not experimental filmmakers. He's an art house version of it, but they're the people that like go out and do insane things with their camera way before anyone else does, and and make it so much more expressive that everyone else can sit there with a shopping list and go, oh my God, that's clever. Not that we don't do that. You know, film language evolves all the time. We're all stealing and borrowing and referencing all the time, but they're so virtuosic that, you know, you just feel like they're leading the charge. You know, it's amazing, and the impact is enormous.
Well, on that note, Bhavna, I think it's time for a commercial break.
Yes.
Okay.
we're back. Ian was just agreeing with me because I said I was going to start our next section with her. She's realized that the stalker man is in her building, Betty does, and she's trying to escape. And so she tosses her pillow out of the window to like test it, I guess. And the close-up of the pillow just exploding took me out. I laugh every time I see it. Because it's such a good stand-in for like an oh shit moment where she's like, I'm gonna die. Like, this is no hope for me. And so she's trying to escape and she's got like her relaxation tape playing in the background.
Blasting. Yeah.
Yeah. She was like, there's a scene where she's talking about, oh, I have a really, you know, good system in place to help myself relax. And I was like, same girl, self-care. Like she's got like her comfy bedroom and her relaxation meditation tape. But that scene in particular, I think it's just like, what a good moment of not even foreshadowing to the audience, but that's such a good moment that says so much with one item and like no other action from her. I just, there's so much tension and then the pillow exploding. I don't know. I could overanalyze every scene of this movie, y'all.
exploding beautifully, by the way.
Yeah.
And actually kind of exploding with the way it like lingers on it, kind of sexually, you know? Like
yes!
There's something, maybe that's contemporary eyes, I don't know. But yeah, you're just like, what's going on with it? It does... It feels like a consummation of something. In that moment, and I'm suddenly sitting there going, I had read that a lot of people talk about the ending, and he has it sort of divides people. Again, of course, I love it, but whatever.
I love it.
And him talking about that he was sort of referencing the original ending, the ending from Red Dragon. Which he referenced the Michael Mann film. I love Michael Mann and I love the original Manhunter, which is an incredible, yes, flawed but beautiful and special movie. And that he's super critical of it. He hates it. And it almost feels like bizarrely in reference, he wanted to have an ending a little like the original from the book. Anyway, as we're talking about that escape scene, I'm suddenly sitting there going, oh, there's ways in which it feels kind of like that moment in Manhunter where they're blasting in a God of Davida. There's that sort of, it's almost like a flip of that, like, you know, the victim using it to protect herself in the way in which the killer uses it, the tooth fairy in Manhunter uses it to, you know,
yes,
to disorient, what's his name in that. Anyway. It's a crazy moment and beautiful. And there's all that great stuff. Again, of course, we go to the POV stuff. There's the craziness of the young girl peeking her head out and, hauling her into the world's best, air duct. Of course.
World's biggest air duct.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're beautifully designed, right? It's Europe. So it's like only the best air ducts for all of us.
And, bougie air ducts.
Yeah. And then I love the tension in that moment where they crawl through, they drop into the, what I assume is the little girl's room.
Yep.
And then Betty sticks her head back out. Mm-hmm. And you just feel the exposure, right? Like, you know, the killer's getting closer. And you're just like, pull your head in, please pull your head in. It drives you crazy. Anyway, it's so good. It's so cleverly done.
And then when she confronts the little girl's mother, it's like, you were just outside my apartment last night.
Yeah.
You were there. You know me. She's just like, oh, whatever.
Okay.
She's brutal to her.
Yeah. She's such a bitch to her. I'm glad that we brought her up because this is going to be a perfect segue into my favorite part of every episode. Our favorite kills, because she is my favorite kill. When she is looking straight into that key,
oh,
that
God,
eye hole, because you know, it's coming, right? Like,
yes,
it's telegraphed
three times. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Because he literally almost storyboards it out for us with the shots.
Yeah.
Oh. And I knew it was coming, and I'm just like, oh, like my stomach every time. I'm like, here it comes. And I don't know how they shot that. I know they had to strap. I did a lot of research on this because I'm such a nerd about this kind of stuff. But I was like, I know that they strapped some kind of like explosive to the back of her head.
Yeah.
And I was like, ma'am, you were married to this man 2 months ago, and now he's directing you in, 2 years ago, excuse me. And now you're being directed by him in a movie where they want to blow off the back of your head.
It's crazy. Like, I remember a moment when I started on Slasher in season 3 with our cinematographer, Nick Haight, referring to that shot. And he knew nothing about it. I'm trying to think of what I was using it for in season 3. I can't think of it.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what happens.
Yeah, but I remember, you know, watching it with him and him calling it up. And the craziness of, like, you're kind of looking at it and going, okay, is this a miniature, or it feels huge? Like, you feel like, did you guys build a person-sized, you know, eye tunnel or whatever the heck you would call that?
What is going on? Yeah.
And that bullet coming through and crashing through the glass of it. It's amazing. It's crazy. It's so, I love it. It's so nuts.
It just blows my mind. I could talk about, like, again, it's one of the aspects of this film that I could probably do a mini-sode on, like, just that. And then I love the scream afterwards where,
yes.
where Betty's just like,
all out of sync, and it
all out of sync
makes sense, and because she's falling back to slow-mo.
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's great. Oh.
And
oh.
I'm so glad you brought up Slasher season 3, because I was going to ask you, like, were there any, like, influences from this film on any of the Slasher series? And unpopular opinion, 3 is my favorite.
Oh. 3 is my favorite.
3 is my favorite.
Thanks. Oh, good. I mean, you know, I want you to like 4, and of course I want you to like 5.
Yes.
And 1 and 2. But
yes. I like them all, but 3 is my 3 holds a special place in my heart. I just loved the concept and the gore, all the gore.
Yeah. Me, is it my favorite? Me too. I mean, I can't, because it's my first, very, you know, loaded, and it was just such a big moment. And there was a lot of I identified with some key characters in there, and there's ways in which it really connected to my life. So definitely. I mean, look, when I'm watching it, this happens to me more often, where I'm watching something and I go, like rewatching it now, and I go, oh, was I sort of feeling that and referencing that before? So definitely the stuff with the vents. I mean, you know, in season 3, we have, and I'm blanking on her name right now, a character played by Genevieve de Graves, you know, who has her head dunked into the acid in the toilet bowl.
Yes.
And she's put up into the ducts. So I definitely feel that. And I made a movie in MOW a long time ago called Sometimes the Good Kill. And it's a murder mystery set in a nunnery. And there's definitely something I can feel myself playing on the vents. Because there's a moment in that I love, where someone is like peeking into a vent and a blade comes right out at them. And so there's like, I'm playing, there's definitely that. But there was something else I was watching and going, oh, there's a little bit of the when the killer is digging around in the costume designer's throat.
Where yes.
Yeah, I'm like, some of that feels very season 4 of Slasher, Flesh and Blood, digging through Cronenberg's body.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking of.
And that's my favorite kill. It's the costume designer when he starts digging around in her mouth.
Oh, it's so good.
A designer tracheotomy. Just.
yeah. And it's so well done. And, you know, you see, I mean, there's the mouth stuff, which is fantastic. But then once they get to the throat and everything like that, you don't see any of it, and it feels, I mean, there's one shot from the side in profile where you feel like you have an exposed neck, but it's so effective. It's like,
this movie, like, in general, does we're gonna just set everything up and show you everything up until the impact, and then just pull away so that your brain can connect the dots and imagine the worst. Like, it does it, and it's that's the most effective form of horror for me.
Yeah,
and I was scared,
except for the hand. The hand stab of your boyfriend, which you're just like, the first time you're like, oh, Jesus, did I see? Oh, there's another one. There's another one. And oh, it's so good.
It's also like Bhavna said that, you know, that's kind of the best version of horror, is that shows you just enough to tease you. And I say this constantly, that like horror movies, A, they should not show the monster in the trailer. That's like one of my biggest pet peeves.
Yeah,
I'm with you. B, like we've got to work on some buildup because I think that's what, like, obviously slasher and then obviously a lot of these slashers that I love so much in film, what they do right, everything that I've ever loved, has this really good tension to it. And again, that goes back to why Giallo always feels very sexual to me, because it's like there's a seduction of the audience and it's like, oh, like, you know, it's coming, but you don't know when. And even the poor stagehand at the beginning of the movie that gets like his head bashed on the hook.
Yeah.
Like the hook is very phallic. And it's I'm like, oh my God. Like, I don't think I realized that until probably my second or third watch. And I was like, that's a penis.
And that buildup is exactly why I was able to roll with the motivation of the killer. Cause I was just like, you know what? I care enough about Betty. I care enough about her not dying by this point, because I mean, she's got to survive after all of that. Right. I care enough about her to just kind of roll with it at that point, because I'm like, okay, now I want to see how this wraps up and see how she gets out of this. But had they kind of exposed that motivation or teased it any earlier, I kind of would have been like, oh, okay, pull up Candy Crush.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like back to the sexual stuff, there's something all the way back to our, imply rather than show, like they dance around the sexual all through there. I mean, you know, you could say, I totally understand some people saying, are you kidding me? They hit it on the head with a hammer, but they don't like you know, mom kind of, I might be speaking too simply, but gets off on whatever the killer was doing, right? Like you, at the end, you see her pleasure, but they don't get, so you know there's a pleasure there verging on sexual at the very, very least, but they don't get like right into it. And impressively, he leaves that just a little muddy for you to go like, you know, to piece it together yourself, make it your own. And it's really effective.
Yeah. Freud would have a field day with this movie. It's just really interesting to me that, you know, we get those brain pulses from Betty, and it reminded me a lot of the, well, now it's kind of in the pop culture psyche, but even a couple years ago, we were just now starting to make the connection between trauma and the body. And so it's really interesting to me that in 1987, Argento was like, oh no, I'm going to show it on screen when she's having a PTSD flashback. It's very interesting to me. And I think, you know, it's just something that it's almost like everyone that makes movies that Bhavna and I go on and on and on about, like The Babadook, like It Follows, that are a little bit more implicitly about trauma. I love, again, that he's like hammer on the, you know, top of the nail, like you said, just sometimes it being more in your face actually leaves it open to more interpretation, I think. Because he never says like, hey, this is what this is, but it's very implied. And I just, I love that she, at the end of the movie, gives this whole monologue about how she's not like other girls and she likes flowers and stuff. Yeah, and it's just like, oh, honey, you're not like other girls for so many reasons.
Yeah.
But it's just really interesting to me that that's how she copes after surviving this awful, awful thing in her life. And I don't know. I just think that's so beautiful for her to be like, oh, you know, look, flowers, because it's an honest reaction. Like once you've survived that, you know, you're still in that first shock phase. I mean, I'm trying to put my thoughts together a little bit more concisely because I feel very strongly about trauma living in our body and how it manifests in other ways in our lives. And I always say like, there needs to be, you know, more movies and TV shows about what happens after our final girl survives.
Yes. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. And we're in a different time, right? Like the, you know, like I can think back to notes on various projects around things like this and going like, oh, let's not dwell on this, or let's not, you know, let's let the characters move on. And I'm like, no, like this is like this, we are now at a time where we're all trying to understand that stuff. We understand it that much more. You see the impact. You see the impact of familial trauma, ancestral trauma, all that kind of stuff. And you also get to see what it can, you know, the kind of trouble it can get you into at some point in your life. Like it feels like that if we're looking to me at what's new in horror, and I think there's a lot of things going on new in horror. That is one of them, is that consciousness and people talking about that stuff. Sometimes inexpertly, or as with this movie, you know, in ways that are open. Like there's a her being in love with the earth at the end, and the creatures and the lizard and the flowers, and her like embracing it entirely and kind of like hugging it, you know, makes so much sense to me. And do I know why? No, but it's like, yeah, if you have been ripped open to this degree, here's something that's beautiful, that's full of life and something positive that she can just, as she does, stick her head into and take comfort in when she's been robbed of, you know, there's definitely no mom or anything like that to find some sort of healing hug from. So this is where it is. Like that to me makes bizarre but emotional sense, I think.
Totally.
And much better than a lot of endings that some horror movies will have, where then it's like, oh, but now here's a sinister little twist into how she's actually like her mom the whole time. Because I hate those kinds of endings.
Oh, I thought you were going to bring up, here's a sinister twist where she actually gets killed. I was like, oh, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Or that. Yeah, that too.
We don't talk about the new one, Ian. Pissed me. I was not happy. I was very upset the night we watched it.
I had a good time, but I suspect I didn't put the standards on it that you did.
No, well, and you saw my tweet and you know, you and I talked about it. We're like, yeah, it was a good time. And I was like, but that ending, I was like, wow, like this is not what I anticipated.
The only thing I liked about that ending was the nod to the original, at least with his flail.
Yeah.
I could talk about, that's another franchise I could talk about forever. Well, Bob and I have talked about our favorite kills, but we haven't given you a chance to yet.
I mean, I feel like we've talked about, do you know what? I don't know. I think I would just go through all of them. Yeah. I mean, I love all of them. I think mine is probably that eye kill, which is just,
of course. Yeah.
Which is crazy. I do enjoy, his eye being, you know, pecked out by the birds. which is fantastic, but I don't know. I suppose it's the digging around in her larynx for that thing. Yeah. And God knows, yeah. Like I can see its influence on me with the digging into Cronenberg's body, and even really the live dissection in season 3.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, there's something there. Yeah, so those are, yeah. But I love them all. I mean, I do really love, like it's weirdly in my head in a very uncomfortable way, his hands being stabbed repeatedly. Mm-hmm. Why? Like it just feels, the first shot is so well done, and I'm not going to make myself go through and freeze frame it and figure out how it's done, because it affects me in a great way. And anyway, I just love that.
I also love the, you know, Crow pecking out his eye, because I love that there's a whole subplot just about how crows are really smart and can remember faces. Crows and ravens are my favorite. And it's like, oh, why do I need like a Ring doorbell when I can just get a murder of crows to sit outside my house?
Do it.
It would be very on brand. But I do love that they attack it, because I, like every good slasher, you know, it's really part whodunit. And I never really saw that ending coming, I guess, like that specific police inspector being it, because, and it being a fake police inspector. And then the second twist of him you know, burning a mannequin instead of himself, that whole twist, it just, I think it lends itself again to sort of that fun freedom and filmmaking thing that we keep coming back to. No American director and writer would do that today. They would be laughed out of the studio. They would be like, yeah, this is a Sci-Fi Channel movie. Shout out to Sci-Fi Channel. No shade. No shade. They have directed things and produced things that I've auditioned for. But I mean, there's things, I'm just trying to think of like an equivalent today to this. And honestly, as ridiculous as it is, it's like the closest ancestor to it is like Sharknado in terms of just being like, we're going to go in.
Well, mm-hmm. If you want to switch languages and countries.
Yeah, yeah.
India still puts out shit like this. And it's they great. Do. It's like, but with better graphics and with better dialogue. Like there's one, I think I've talked about it on the pod before. My cousins and I, we got drunk one night and just watched it. Because it was on, it's actually on Netflix. It's called Ghost Stories. Mm-hmm. Ian, it's on Netflix Canada, so you should be able to find it. Okay. And one of them, I'm just going to spoil it. It's the one by Karan Johar. He's not a horror director. He's one of those like big budget, really romantic films kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Not your stereotypical ones. He does push the envelope with, or he has pushed the envelope with storylines and stuff for India. But that one is cheesy as fuck and I love it. But like, it's about this dude that like, this girl, they're arranging an arranged marriage. Like it's one of those, like they have the blind meet and whatnot. And they're talking about kind of like what they want out of life and all this kind of stuff. And the guy goes, yeah, let me just talk to my granny. And she's like, but didn't she die? How many ever years ago? He goes, yeah, but we still have to ask her. And it just escalates and escalates and escalates from there to the absurd. And it actually kind of works.
Oh, I love it.
Like, so that's just one of the stories. There's like a zombie story in there. There's another one. It's just four little, like a little anthology movie. But like, it's this stuff does still happen out there. You just won't find it like west of the Atlantic.
No. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah, because you do feel that in something similar in Hong Kong cinema. And definitely the Indian. Actually, we were watching. My first AD is Indian and he has Adam McDonald and I watching this crazy movie that has some of the most, you know, nutso action in it. And which reminds one? Me, sorry, I'm going to have to text him while we're talking and ask him to remind me what it is. It's like there's a sequence that I could act out with this guy doing this flying leap. And multiple slap of this guy running. Oh my God.
Oh, that could be anything.
Yeah. Yeah. but yeah, yeah, it's totally alive and well. And you also feel that in some of the Asian, you know, ghost films, like they're like,
yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then you get into all the martial arts connection to it and yeah, absolutely. But for me, there's something about all of this stuff. And this is a little bit of a, like, for me, an axe to grind or just my obsession as a guy that came out of theater and grad school and all this kind of stuff where I was obsessed with a lot of, you know, what the Romans were doing, what the Greeks were doing, and all the Jacobean stuff. And I'm like, the insanity of like the Duchess of Malfi, someone killing someone and making a diorama with the whole family. The insanity of Titus Andronicus, of poor, is her name Lavinia? Lavinia walking mm-hmm. in with her hands cut off, raped, her tongue cut out. The insanity of what happens in there with the strangest, almost comic responses to it in full of pain and horror and all that kind of stuff. Seneca serving, you know, in Thyestes serving the family to the mother in pies, like all of this kind of stuff. I just feel like this speaks to us, and this is where that kind of tragedy now lives. Like, there's no way in a movie that my parents would go see a drama, you know, at the movies that they would expect something like that to happen. But it clearly does something to us and for us, and it now lives in horror, I think.
You know? I'm 100%. So glad you brought up Titus Andronicus, because there's actually a really gruesome, amazing, gory adaptation out of India from 2017 called The Hungry.
Okay.
It's intense.
It's intense. don't eat. I saw it at the festival.
Pie scene there too. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like if you've it's woo. I remember going into it being like, okay, it's a Titus Andronicus adaptation. I'm like, okay, and it's Indian, so I'm like, all right, got to go for the culture, you know, the culture times two. And then I saw some of the cast, and I'm like, I saw Nasruddin Shah in there, and he's a chef's kiss kind of an actor. So I was like, all right, I'm in. I'm like, I'm in. This is an easy sell. And then I watched it, and I'm like, I took like two bites of my popcorn during that film, and that was about it, because woof, it was intense. It was actually not that bad. It's called The Hungry, and it came out in 2017, and it's very intense. There's lots of obviously food related things that are being eaten if you know your play, which you obviously do. And it's very Indian, but very, very not at the same time. The best way I could describe it is they went there.
Yeah.
So
you'll love it.
Let us know what you think whenever you watch it.
we're gonna fuck Ian up for like, it's fine.
That one's, yeah, listen, look at what we're talking about. Look at the movie we're talking about today.
I know.
It's just the 2017 equivalent of let's fuck you up.
Well, and I was gonna say, between, you know, all the regions of the world that we talked about so far that tend to go there, Australia is killing it right now with just things coming out left and right. I just rewatched The Tunnel the other night. It's found footage, which is one of my other like favorite subgenres. And I don't want to give away too much, but like The Descent wishes, wishes it could go there. And then the other one that we both watched recently was The Loved Ones, Australian. I will eventually cover that too, but it to me, there are traces of this style in those movies.
Really? Okay.
Specifically The Loved Ones, because it's got a lot of torture-ish in it, but it's not torture porn, right? And like that's what something I really wanted to get into, especially with having you on the episode. To me, there's a difference between like what you do on Slasher, especially this last season, and what's in this movie and like what's in certain other slashers versus like, I don't love things that could possibly be labeled as torture porn, because things that don't have a plot, like there's no, like, it's great that we have these young people tied up and now we're going to cut off their toes one by one, but it doesn't do anything for me. I don't know. Like, I don't want to shit on someone's like pet, you know, projects or whatever that they make, but it's really hard for me to sit through something where I don't care about the character. Like
Agreed. Like, I mean, and look, that's something that sometimes people level at Slasher. I mean, I've heard everything, I guess, leveled at it. I mean, I care about them. I mean, in season three, I cry when the killers die. Like I'm, and it's because I'm on their side. Yeah. I think they're going about it the wrong way. But I certainly understand and feel for why they do and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, look, I'm like, as I got into Slasher, it's definitely clarified what I want and need from the genre, I think, as a consumer and as a creator as well. And there was also, too, at some point in season three, the producers sat me down with, as I was writing it, and I wasn't writing it in absence of Aaron Martin, the creator, or the other writers, but where I was taking it, and they were like, you know, it's getting too dark. You're leaving the brand of the show. And there was something that there were some things that were happening, and I was like, oh yeah, you're right. You're so right. You know, and it was just good for me to sit there and feel that and have someone call that out, but also too, just to go, what do I need? And yeah, I have to care about some people. Mm-hmm. There's things that just for my tolerance and what it does to me that I don't want to put myself through. So torture, I'm not down for torture. Like I have trouble in movies. It doesn't even have to be a horror. If someone is being tortured and they keep cutting away to other stuff, I'm losing my mind. Like, I'm just like, you have to get back. We have to get this person out. And I'm like, it's just the awareness. There's a place in Toronto. I used to volunteer at the Canadian Center for Victims of Torture. And you're just like, so you just get that, like, sort of put into your head the reality of what some people are dealing with. And I'm like, yeah, I can't go there. And for me too, sexual violence, mm-hmm. though, curiously, currently, I think it's sexual violence directed towards women. I think I might be okay with it directed towards guys, but I'm you know, fictionally, yeah. But I'm so I struggle with some of those things. I struggled a little bit with Split. Like, yeah. To me, there's a ways in which that's a very accessible, peachy keen movie.
Yeah.
But at all times, I'm like going, do you know what? Somewhere right now, there are three young women in a basement somewhere. Yeah. With someone facing the potential that's here. Like, I just kept flashing to that in my head. But yeah. To go all the way back to what you were saying, Jamie, it's like, yeah, I need the big clarifier for me, which is a bummer when I get to stuff like the French extremists, because I think they're some of the best filmmakers out there. Like, The Craft absolutely phenomenal, but I need hope.
Yeah.
And I can't, and you know, and I think they announce very clearly, really early, as I think as we do in Slasher, they're like, we are this.
Yes.
You know, and they'll do something where you're like, yeah. And I'm blanking on the movie that begins, I don't even want to describe it. Anyway. And,
are you talking about Irreversible?
Nope, I'm not, but sure. It could be that. I mean, I love him.
I do too, but it's a lot.
Yes. Yeah. So there's just like, yeah. I need to come through. Like, I don't want to, every now and then I'll watch something because of my schedule in the morning while I work out or something like that on an elliptical. And then I walk away so depressed and bummed out and, you know, and I'm like, I don't want that. No. It doesn't mean I need the nonstop fun and at times unreality of Sam Raimi or something like that, which is the best. But I, you know, but yeah, it's, but we're all in this for a different thing, right? Like I remember on one of a Clubhouse chat that you might've been in where we talked about, the girl with the dragon tattoos. And I talked about, I said, I don't think we need in the original, I don't think we need the half hour or approaching half hour of her being, you know, sexually assaulted, mm-hmm. raped, abused, da, 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 da. And someone on our group who I respected a lot, a woman, said, oh, I need that. I need that in there. And I was like, okay, really? Tell me why. And she said, I need to fully see the monster because I would need to know what we're going to beat. I need to know what I'm going to overcome. And I found that really convincing. And interestingly, after that, I watched the American version, which I'd never seen, and they don't do it. And I actually feel like, as much as I was calling for it to not be there, I'm like, oh God, the American one, it's in my head, it's what I was imagining would be my solution to it, which would be her just walking out of the building, limping, barely able to move, and bleeding in terrible places. I was like, actually, in the American one, I don't think it's enough, probably. And it's really interesting, all of that, our tastes, our tolerances, our desires when we go to the genre. What do we want? Like, what are we craving, you know?
Yeah. I did, however, like in the American one where she went with the revenge, though. I thought that was interesting. I loved it.
That is one of my favorite scenes of all time. And everyone's always like, what's your favorite part of the movie? And I'm like, well, because it's so funny. I think too, and this kind of overlaps with both opera, other Argento films, slasher, and then the genre in general. We struggle all the time with that question, right? Like, what are we here for? Because I think there's a very wide berth between like what we actually enjoy and then like what a lot of mainstream thinks we enjoy in horror.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, for example, you said that when the killers die, you cried. The new version of It, the chapter one, mm-hmm. I cry every time when Georgie dies. I can't do it. It makes me so sad. I also cried in the new Pet Sematary where the little brother runs out in front yep. of the truck. I cried like a baby and I knew it was coming. And it's not just kids, but that's just an example. But then on the yeah. other hand, one of my favorite scenes of last season was, you know, I thought we were going to get him gutted on a fish hook. And instead we got a forced amputation, which is like one of my biggest fears. But I was like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. I love it. And you know, I got to watch a couple of those episodes with you on Clubhouse. And that was so fun because I was just like, Ian, I'm having a panic attack and I love it. Like I'm just dying. But like, to me, that's what horror is. I know whoever's been listening to this whole season, take a shot because I'm about to say it. It's the inevitable where there's like a train track that we can't get off of. And there's yes. nothing I can do to, like, shit's going to happen and I can't yeah. stop it. And that's life in general too. But what's at the end of that train track can be different from, you know, subgenre to subgenre. And I just, yeah. I don't necessarily need that overt sexual assault either. But I think if there's a movie that does it well, it is the American version of Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Yeah. And I actually don't mind, which there's a couple of different like 80s, of all things, 80s slashers that do it well. That's why I got so excited when you said you were doing Terror Train. I don't know if you can talk about that, but you don't understand. I have made Sheree watch that movie so many times. And she was like, Jamie, what the fuck? She was like, what is this? And I said, you are welcome. She was like, they put a corpse in this poor boy's bed. And I was like, you're damn right they do. That's our friendship in a nutshell, though, is just me making my friends watch very fucked up things.
I love it.
Yeah.
But to touch on the assault, yeah. sorry to cut you, sorry.
No.
But to touch on the assault thing, I think there's like a middle line, though. Like it's, mm-hmm. I don't say cut it out completely and I don't say put it in all the time. It's just if it doesn't service the plot. And if it doesn't service motivation, yes. and but if it can be referenced without being shown, great. And like still be effective, great. But don't just yeah. throw it in there. Don't throw a Game of Thrones in there.
Ugh, yeah. Don't get me started.
Agreed. There's an amazing Toronto writer. She's a screenwriter. She's one of the creators of Rookie Blue. But she's also a great journalist named Ellen Van Stone. And she wrote
I've heard of her.
Yeah, she wrote a, you know, I think a searchable article, I want to say in The Globe, mm-hmm. and it is about the sort of the trope of rape and sexual assault and just how, you know, just how common and at times potentially lazy that is as a sort of story component. And actually, she tells a really interesting, as a screenwriter, and TV screenwriter, she tells an interesting journey, story about her journey on a show where mm-hmm. she was the person pitching it and then catching herself and going like, oh my God, what the hell am I doing? Like, why is this like, oh, it's a woman. Let's have her be pregnant or raped, you know, and then spin out the story from there. I hear you. I feel the same way, but it's really loaded. And we get to that taste thing, you know, like it's just like, yeah, and just where we want to live. What do we need to see? What makes it more real? What do we need to endure? Like, I don't know. It's fascinating for all the reasons we've talked about, and really going all the way back to trauma and why we watch, and you know what we're craving there. Yeah, you know? What do we need to see? What makes it more real?
Go ahead, Ian, because like, I feel like you're about to say something else really awesome.
it's fascinating for all the reasons we've talked about, and really going all the way back to trauma and why we watch, and you know what we're craving there. Yeah, and Go. Yeah. No, no, I wasn't. Go. Yeah. No.
I love that you just summed that up so perfectly, because that takes us straight into kind of our closing thoughts for the episode, because I think that that ties in beautifully with the theme of who are we when we're watching and what are we willing to watch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. that's my when I'm having like a good thought process. Bhavna, do you want to go first with closing thoughts? Oh, wait, before we do that, I have one more question.
Yeah.
Since this was Argento's musical, if you could do a musical episode of Slasher, would you do it?
I really would. And and it has been, I love musicals. Like, musicals have saved my life a couple times. Like, just where I hit a point, and actually I thought I was just in one right now with reading, where like last night I started and tossed 4 books. One, I got 80 pages in, and I was like, you know, and I'm the state I'm in when I'm throwing them, you know. And so I hit a point where was hating things I was involved in years ago, everything I was creating, everything I was reading, everything I was seeing. And then I've seen musicals. I remember seeing Spring Awakening in New York, and it just like fixing me, you know. And I was like, and the simplicity of it, the purity of it, the joy of it. I was just like, yeah, okay, thank you. Things don't have to be, you know, all the things that I sometimes mired myself in. So hell yeah, I would. I think that would be very interesting. You know, obviously Sweeney Todd's there as a fantastic example of, you know, what that could be. And strangely enough, there's a lot of people in this season, and of course I can't talk about any of it, but there's a lot of people in this season with a pretty heavy music background or musical theater background in the season of Slasher. And I was well aware of that. And there was a scene that I was rewriting, and I was like, I actually reached out to one of the actors and who I didn't know. And I was like, hey, can you sing? And he sent me back a video of him and another cast member both singing something that they do to amuse themselves. They're working on learning a big musical number, you know, when they're between takes or in the trailer and stuff like that. So there was just something we were dancing around. I was like, this sort of dream sequence, this could be entirely sung. Is this the right time to do it and all that? Yes. Yeah. Hell yeah. I would love to do that. That'd be so much fun. And I think there's a way in which, depending, you know, on the show, this is all also in absence of my talking to Aaron Martin, the creator of the show, my partner on the show, because Aaron has beautifully vehement no's with me. Like, he and I do a lot of like, yeah, but, or yeah, but, and whatever. And then every now and then he just brings a hammer down with clarity, which I love. So yeah, I don't know how Aaron would feel about that, but yeah. And Tara Crane, I can talk about it, you know, only just to say, Aaron Martin, we wrote it, and we know I've worked with the director, Philippe Gagnon, before. He directed a movie of mine. He directed Sometimes the Good Kill, the, nunnery, convent murder MOW, and did a great job of it. And so yeah, I'm hopeful. There's great cast in it. I haven't seen it yet. There's great cast in it. There's actually some Slasher cast in it.
I saw. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm psyched.
Ugh, amazing. Well, that is going to lead us into our final thoughts. Bhavna, final thoughts on Opera 1987, Dario Argento. Hit us.
Okay. So I think I saw it for the first time for this episode. Oh, so nice. Yeah, it's one of those movies that's always on my list, but it's so hard to find.
Yeah.
As we talked about. And I literally just got back from New York like maybe 15 minutes before we started recording.
Oh, wow.
And it's on Tubi in the States. So I watched it last night. So I was, so I'm watching it with like a more of a, I'm watching it as a, as an older movie kind of perspective, which was still really nice to see. Cause I was able to pick up, like Jamie, like you said, like all the films that were inspired by this. I'm like, oh, so that's where that came from. So it was a very, fun watch. I think this movie still rocks this many years down the road. Like, I feel like this movie was fresh enough for its time. And because it's almost like a mother of so many other films that like you could watch this maybe even 30 years from now and still be just as amused. Cause like I said, my own, literally the only thing where I didn't roll with immediately was just the killer's motivation. That's about it.
Yeah.
Just like the, in the past, the mommy serial killing weird sex stuff, whatever. That was the only part that I was kind of like, I don't know. The rest of it, I'm like, yes. Yes. Also going like, I could wear that outfit now. That outfit's back.
Yes.
Hey, that's like my hair right now.
Yep.
Just taking some inspiration now that we can go back outside. But basically, this movie's fun as fuck.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's fun as fuck. It was fun as fuck then, I'm assuming. It's fun as fuck now, and it will remain fun as fuck.
I love that.
And... to do my least favorite thing from the film festival, this isn't a question, but it's a comment. literally, I groan every time, and I do have horror stories I can tell you guys off pod, which I've told Jamie, which has made her cringe. But thank you so much for Slasher Season 3, if I haven't talked about it enough. Just it's just so nice to see diversity in horror, and especially coming from Canadian horror.
Yep.
Like, my heart, because everything I watch is just so white.
Yeah.
It's so white. And so I find myself not caring about people.
Yeah. Well, I loved, what's his name? Oh, I'm going to blank on his name. The male.
Is it the detective?
No, the male. I'm going to a real person. The male the male director of Holly, of horror noir. I think it was him. I was watching in an interview and he said, well, I have to admit that I watch a lot of these movies to see these full of beautiful white kids to see them die.
Yeah.
Like, you see them be killed, horribly killed. I was like, yes, I get it.
Yeah.
As much as I can, but anyway.
I was one of like, so Ian, you'll get this. I saw Get Out in two different theaters and had two very different experiences. So I saw Get Out at the Carlton.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. In the middle of the day. I saw it at a matinee.
Can't even imagine who was there. Okay. Yep.
Yep. And so you could probably guess that there were points where me and my friends, we were laughing our asses off.
Yeah.
You know, I'm from Scarborough. I have a very different experience to the people going to the Carlton. Yeah. and then there were just the uncomfortable old white people in the crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the uncomfortable old white people. And then the other time I saw it at Young and Dundas.
Oh. Oh.
So much better experience.
It was like going to a concert. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh my God.
Exactly. It was one of those that was my second viewing. So I'd gone to the washroom at one point, and you know how you can, it's that old, like it's not an old building, but it's like not the best built building. And like you can hear the movie when you're going to like, you're taking a piss.
Yeah.
And just the laughter was louder than the actual movie track.
Oh, amazing.
So sincerely, thank you for the diversity.
I don't think I say you're welcome, do I, or whatever. I'm glad.
Take the W.
I'm glad. Obviously, we Aaron and I both care about that and cared about that and knew it was a knew that we want that in the show. Period. And but also just how much a part of that story it is, you know, like it was so great also to talk about everything that spun out of that without that being the diversity itself provoking it, you know, like
we talk about
it a lot. I was worried a little bit when I was like, oh, where's this gonna go, am I gonna like this, and then I was like, oh, okay, we're good.
We talk about that a lot. We just covered Fresh, and there was a moment. There were a couple moments where we were like, "All right, where's this going?" I mean, it's fine.
Okay.
Turned out okay. Ian, closing thoughts on this movie?
People should see, if someone hasn't seen it, they should see it. I think it's a visually stunning film, which I'm always a sucker for. It's a beautiful art film of a horror that's just like, you know, brilliantly directed and shot and it's big in all the right places. Like it's a ton of fun. It's scary. It's grim, in the kills. And, I don't know. I love it. I'm inspired by it all the time. And it's just, you know, it's just such a place of, pleasure and home for me. So yeah, I know. I love it. I'm so glad I got to rewatch it and talk to you guys about it right away.
Yeah, no, listen, took the words out of my mouth. My closing thoughts are really short and simple. This movie is so foundational to my taste that I think if you're going to make one of those lists that you see floating around Twitter sometimes where it's like, you know, five movies to describe who you are as a person, as much as I want to put Scream on there, I think actually this has to go on there instead, because it is the granddaddy of them all in terms of what I like. Oh, wow. Down to the white sweater kill at the end. We have a running, I think we've lost count, Bhavna, how many times a boy in a white sweater gets stabbed in a movie. I think we've lost.
Oh, God.
We used to have a running tally. I did, because I was like, all right, what number are we on? Sure. But yeah, anyways, it's just, again, I think it's just so foundational to my personal taste and to the taste of a lot of filmmakers that have been influential on this like third generation, I feel like, of sort of a slasher wave. And yeah, this movie just means a lot to me. So I was thrilled when you wanted to cover it. I was like, yes, absolutely.
So
Ian, where can the people? Yeah. Oh my gosh. Please. Thank you so much. Yes. Where can the people find you on the socials if you want them to? And when can we see the next season of Slasher?
People. I'm on Twitter. I should know what my Twitter is, but I don't. But you know, I'm on there.
I think you're just at Ian Carpenter. Yeah. Carpenter.
There might be a number. I'm not sure. But I'm on there. I'm on Instagram as, I think it's Ian Carpenter 99. I'm on those. And Slasher, we have not announced a date yet. But you know, we're still shooting, and I will be in post for that pretty much getting really close to Christmas. So you can imagine, what that means for when it will come out, but it will be on Shudder, and it will be on Hollywood Suite both in the new year. And we are so pumped about it. Like it's amazing. We're putting it together, but it looks amazing, and the actors have been incredible, and Adam's direction is so good. Anyway, we're already really proud of it, so I can't wait to share it with people.
Ugh, you know, I'm so stoked, because as soon as you guys put out the theme, I was like, yes! Like, I was like, yes, period pieces.
It's so fun. And Terror Train will be on Tubi, and they haven't announced that yet. Have they announced that? Where? Oh, yes.
Halloween. I think it'll be out.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure it's Halloween.
I
mean, knowing the answer.
What's the secret these days? But anyway, yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got a lot on your plate, which is why we appreciate you so much for coming on and chatting with us. Well, guys, we are Bloody Broads Pod on Twitter and Instagram, as well as Patreon. Be on the lookout for some exclusive episodes coming to you soon, if they're not out already by the time this comes out, and some newsletters. So until next time, y'all. Bye.
Bye.